Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. I'm Chris Farrell, substituting for the vacationing Carrie Miller this morning. The job market has been changing for the better. 8 years into the economic recovery, the third longest in U.S. history, the unemployment rate is down to 4.6%. And the improved job market convinced the Federal Reserve Board to hike its benchmark interest rate earlier this month. Now, problems remain. Don't get me wrong. Labor force participation rate of Americans between ages 25 and 54 is disappointingly low. Wages are on the rise, but slowly. Oh, very slowly. Still, what economists have noticed and what I've noticed, you know, listening to public radio, reading the newspaper, is now management is just complaining about the difficulties of finding the workers they need. Case in point, 31% of small businesses say they have jobs they can't fill, according to a recent survey by the National Federation of Independent Business. Now, that's the highest reading in 15 years. The U.S. economy is changing one from where the problem, and I'm putting problem in quotes, isn't too many workers can't find jobs. Instead, too many jobs can't find workers. And this is terrific news. Management may struggle with the new reality, but a good definition of a healthy economy is when firms chase workers rather than workers chasing jobs. So, that's the thesis for this morning's conversation. If you're thinking about finding a better job, looking to make a career change, strike out on your own, well, 2017 looks like a good year to make a move. So with that as background, in my experience, the tough question is what do you want to do next? For example, many people in the second half of life wonder, how can I keep earning an income as my career winds down and do something I love? Younger generations at work share the same sentiment. They, too, want to find both purpose and a paycheck on the job. So how do we find ourselves? Well, we're joined by two guests with insights that guide us on the path to finding meaning and money at work. John Tarnoff is a veteran of the entertainment industry, a career coach, and he co-runs the Entertainment Industry Management Graduate Program for Carnegie Mellon University in Los Angeles. And we're also joined by Bobby Rebell. She's a Reuters business video journalist and personal finance expert in New York City. She's the author of How to Be a Financial Grown-Up, Proven Advice from High Achievers on How to Live Your Dreams and Have Financial Freedom. Welcome to both of you.
Hey, good morning, Chris. Hi, Bobby.
Well, thank you. And of course, we want people's calls. So, are you thinking about an encore career, reinventing yourself? Are you thinking about changing your job? Share your experience with us. So, call us with your question or your comment, 651-227-6000, or toll free, 800-242-2828, and online at nprnews.org/live. So, John, Bobby, I want to ask you the exact same question. We'll start off with you, Bobby. What do you think of the thesis that if you're thinking about making a change in your job, a change in your career, that 2017 looks like a good year to act?
I agree 100%. As all the data that you so well, you said so well in your introduction lays out, there's a lot going on that is in favor of the employee, and it could be a very good time for many people to either move jobs or better their own situation where they are, and that may be asking for a raise or asking for other things that will make their job more satisfying and more rewarding for them, because as you mentioned, it's not always just about money. There's other things that jobs can give us. So I think this is a very good year to be thinking about making a move.
So, John, what's your perspective?
Well, I'm not going to argue with the stats. I think the stats sound really good. My concern really, and I come at this from focusing pretty much primarily on the boomer generation, on workers over 50, is the question of, sure, there are openings out there, but are employers willing to hire older workers to fill these jobs? I think this is an issue on both sides, in terms of employer bias, but also in terms of older workers being willing to do what it needs, what they need to do to be able to get those jobs.
Okay, so I have to tell the audience, John and I shared a stage, the Road Theater in North Hollywood, California. It was a Actors Fund event working well into the traditional retirement years. You know, people in the entertainment industry, what about second, third careers? And John, you proudly announced during this event that you've been fired 39% of the time during your 40-year career, and that number has stuck with me. So what did that experience of being involuntarily losing your job teach you about voluntarily choosing your job, particularly in light of what you're talking about in terms of age discrimination or bias against older workers?
Right. Well, I think the key word here is adaptability. And one of the things that I learned in the entertainment field, which is a notoriously unstable, unpredictable kind of a business, where you really have to be entrepreneurial no matter what kind of position you're in, whether you're actually working freelance or whether you're actually working inside an organization, is to be adaptable, to be willing to not take things too personally, to rebound quickly from a setback, and to learn the lesson about how to kind of change your story a little bit when you go out for the next job. And I think what's been accepted in the entertainment and the creative industries for a long time, this kind of instability, this is now, because of the nature of the fast-changing economy, is something that has permeated, I think, the rest of the world. So my coming into this field as a career coach with my years of entertainment experience is really about promoting this idea of adaptability and willingness to reframe old ideas about who we are, how we deal in the world, how the world works, and really bring a beginner's mind to the process.
You know, Bobby, two words I wanted to pick up on that John, entrepreneurial and instability, because I think young people are told today two messages. One is you're going to have multiple jobs. It's really an unstable job market, and you need to have this entrepreneurial mindset, which sounds really good. But boy, that can be really hard, too.
It can be hard. But as John mentioned, I mean, this is also a new generation. And I think that we are rethinking how we approach the job market. And even in the entertainment industry, it is changing. It's interesting. Now you don't have we can go years back when movie stars were employed as employees from movie studios to now, who are the biggest stars of the day? They're YouTubers, right? And they're effectively entrepreneurs. And that is now a job. I asked my 9-year-old, what does he want to be? When he was 4, he wanted to be an astronaut. Now he's 9 years old. He wants to be a YouTuber, guys. That's a job.
Oh,
and I
can't
even say to him, that's not a job, right? It's a job.
John, you have consulting advice on this one?
No, I think that's great.
The way they want to do them, right, John?
It's kind of scary, but it's
great.
Entrepreneurs. No, I agree, absolutely.
They're running their own businesses? Absolutely.
You know, my advice, and I have a really kind of interesting perspective, because on the one hand, I'm teaching grad students who were in their, you know, mid to late 20s about getting their first jobs in an industry. And on the other side of my practice, I'm working with older workers who are kind of looking at their last job as they try to extend their careers. And the one piece of advice that I give to both sets of advisees is that regardless of whether you're getting a W-2 at the end of the year or you're getting a 1099 at the end of the year, so either being a salaried employee or being a freelancer, you need to think of yourself as a consultant providing value to a client rather than as an employee taking directions from a boss.
And one of the things, John, I want to pick up on is a lot of people are kind of curious, okay, I do want to make a change, but boy, you know, I'm working hard. Have a family, maybe a partnership, want to stay up with my friends. And this notion of how do I even find the time to figure out what it is I want to do next? So what are some practical, what's some practical advice you can give some people to figure that out in a very busy life when your employer typically is demanding more and more of your time?
Right, right. Well, I'll do kind of a shameless plug here. I have a book coming out in just about 40 days called Boomer Reinvention, How to Create Your Dream Career Over 50. And I lay out this 5-step process that is, I hope, accessible to everyone, particularly at this age. And, you know, I think we can all find a half hour a day to start working on something that is this important, because it really is about the rest of our lives. And particularly if you're feeling kind of shut down and you're one of these people who's kind of what a friend of mine calls the working worried. You know, you're over 50. You're kind of looking at that supposed retirement on the horizon. You haven't really saved enough money to maintain your lifestyle. You know, your kids may be living at home. And Chris, you may have a more updated stat on this, but my understanding is that up to about 30% of kids between 20 and 30 are still living at home.
Yeah.
You know, you're probably still taking care of your parents. So, you know, I think a half hour a day is not too much to ask for helping you figure out the rest of your life. And the first thing I would suggest to people, and this is what I suggest to my clients, is that you keep a diary and that you do this every day, the same day, morning, evening, and you start writing about whatever is coming up. It's almost a stream of consciousness. And out of that daily diary, if you do this for a month, I guarantee you, and you're focused on what are you going to do next, all sorts of ideas are going to come up about your satisfaction, dissatisfaction with your current job, old dreams that are now maybe resurfacing that you think you could do. Maybe you decide to pursue them. Maybe you decide you've changed in the interim and those are no longer good, but you've resolved this question. Start thinking about people that you can talk to get feedback about what you want to do. That would be my first step suggestion, and I talk a lot more about this in the book.
What do you think, Bobby?
I think those are all excellent suggestions. What I would do is add to that to create a side hustle, which can be a way to gain new skills or just enjoy another interest. If you have an interest, for example, Kevin O'Leary, who I interviewed for my book, How to Be a Financial Grown-Up, and I interviewed about 30 people and asked them, what was your financial grown-up moment? And his moment was when he realized he wasn't going to, through his stepfather, he wasn't really going to make his primary income from being a photographer. So he made that effectively a side hustle. So he's got a few jobs, which we all know about, including Shark Tank and his various businesses. But then his side hustle to this day is photography. So maybe were he in this scenario where he were looking for something different to do, he could pivot to a career in photography or doing that part-time. So I think what John's saying rings true in that you should take at least half an hour a day, maybe more, and have that evolve into a side hustle that could be an income-producing sideline that could eventually become a different kind of full-time job that you can pivot to at the time that you're ready. But dip your toe in the waters and try new things and see where that leads without, you know, losing focus on your primary job.
So it's a shameless plug. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. And I think, you know, one of the things about reinvention and pivoting is that people often think, oh, my God, this is a radical decision. I've got to do this thing overnight. I've got to stop being this thing today and be this new thing tomorrow. And I think, as Bobby is pointing out, this thing can be a gradual process. And I think particularly if you have a day job still, and you've got an income coming in, now is the time to really get into this, because you don't want to be in a situation where all of a sudden that rug is pulled out from under you and you really have to hustle.
Yeah, and I think it's important that people think about that this is a process, it is an experiment, because when you make a shift, you open up new opportunities, you meet new people, you add to your network, you may start thinking differently. So it's not as if this is, you know, you get one chance, one choice, you make one move and everything rests on that. It just may be that you make a move, there's some good things about it, you may be making another move a little while later.
And the other thing I would also suggest, and something that I've done in my own life in the last few years, is get out and don't go to networking events per se, but make plans with people in person. Don't hide behind the computer. Maybe you might meet them in a Facebook chat group that's, you know, there's a lot of industry-specific groups on Facebook, so you might make the initial connection there, but then try to meet somebody for coffee, especially if they're in the same city, and just don't have an agenda. Just learn about what they do, get to know them, and put that in your back pocket for when you may need that, because all those different connections add up to something. A lot of my book, shameless plug again, was done through connections that I met just over the years when I didn't need anything, and then I could ask them for an introduction to somebody because I'd already established the relationship. So I would really work on networking before there's an urgency. In other words, you don't want to be calling somebody saying, oh my goodness, my company's having layoffs, can you help me? You want to just be having coffee to learn more about what they do with no agenda.
Well, I'm glad you
and
both
offer
did.
To help them, by the way, also. Always
yes.
Offer to help other people.
So I'm glad you both did shameless plugs, because I've read John's book, or at least the advanced copy of his book, read your book, and they're both wonderful. So that is good. And what I want to ask you, Bobby, is what did you learn about thinking, rethinking, reinventing yourself, you know, when you were writing your book?
Well, the book is, in fact, a reinvention of myself. It's actually going back to my original roots. When I first started as a journalist, I had wanted to really focus on personal finance per se. And in fact, I went to New York University and got a certificate in financial planning. At the time, they didn't allow if I wasn't working full time as a CFP, I couldn't get the designation, but I took the coursework. And I really had intended for my career to be more focused on personal finance. The way that my career evolved, I ended up reporting from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange and doing a lot of breaking news reports, which was really exciting and wonderful. But I reached a point where I wanted to kind of circle back and get back to those roots where I spoke more directly to people about more tangible issues that affect people in their daily lives. So I came up with this idea for a book. And that was effectively my reinvention. I also came to Reuters and created an internal side hustle, which was writing this column that I write for our Reuters Money Group, which focuses on personal finance issues, primarily for millennials. So that was my own refocusing of my career, adding to my primary job, which is breaking business news and the news of the day, but going back to my personal finance interest.
So I'm curious, in your experience, one of the things that has struck me over time is transitions are good, but transitions always take longer than anyone expects. You can mentally say, this is the transition I'm making, but then the reality is it doesn't happen that smoothly. Was that your experience?
I did know that it would take that long. So the book was a 2 to 3 year process, if that's what you're referencing. And I really was prepared for that, because as a journalist with many friends that have written books, I did know that is how long the book takes if you go the traditional route, which is what I did. So I was prepared for that. But I do think that a lot of people don't fully appreciate how much work goes into a career pivot or transition or reinvention, however you want to frame it. It does take time. And you have to put in the time if you want to get the results very often. And a lot of people give up. They get frustrated. They think that things should turn around more quickly than they do. And that's why I say, start laying the groundwork by just talking to people and going out and having coffee with people and learning about what they do and giving to them before you ask them to give to you. Always be giving and saying, how can I help you? What can I do to help in what's important to you? And that will really create a very positive feeling and a feeling that they will want to help you when you ask down the road.
John, what was your experience?
Well, first of all, I just want to point out or bring up something that Bobby just said, which I think is really, really important, which is that she created a side hustle within her job. And she, clearly, if I understand this correctly, she perceived an area of value to create for her organization, and she went for it. She just went for it. And this is something which I think a lot of people, particularly in my generation, are kind of clueless about, this idea that they just should be there kind of doing their job every day, and our focus kind of externally on reacting to the input that comes around them, whether it's from their supervisor or coworkers or from the outside. And to be able to kind of double down and figure out an area where they can take what they know and what they're good at and create something new that is of value is enormously important, and you may wind up reinventing yourself within your own job, which is kind of remarkable. So,
right, and I want to just add to that you have to also be cognizant of the trends and what is happening in your industry. So our industry is media, and so not only was there a need at my organization for someone to write personal finance columns about millennial personal finance issues. There was nobody doing that, so I filled that need. But also, we now are doing Facebook Lives, which literally didn't exist, I believe, even a year ago. And that's become a big part of media, and it's having a huge impact. So that is also something that I do within Reuters in the personal finance space. And I think that's been wonderful mutually, both for myself. It's a whole new skill set. And hopefully, I'm bringing value to Reuters as well.
So I guess we're getting some online comments.
Yeah, I'm monitoring comments online at nprnews.org, where Bonnie says, I don't think it's a good year for hiring older people. It drives me nuts that the age at which Social Security benefits and retirement keep getting older, but there's no corresponding willingness on the part of businesses or the public sector to hire older workers.
Okay, so I'm going to toss that one to you, John. What's your reaction?
Well, I think At first blush, absolutely. This is a very, very common perception that people have who are older, who are looking for work, and it is not unfounded. I think the slightly good news that I think the employers are beginning to recognize that older workers, A, aren't going away, B, don't really have to go away, and C, can provide more value than they may have thought previously. So I think there is that willingness, but I think the other side of it is I detect in the comment a kind of a decisive dismissal of this person's value as an older worker. I mean, I think there's this weight, this burden that the commenter is bringing into the equation, and I would really challenge that. I would really challenge this idea that it's not happening, that there really are no jobs for older workers. I think it, again, goes back to attitude. And I think as difficult as it is and as long as it's going to take, and it is going to take time, and as we know from the stats, it has, over the course of the recent recession, taken older workers as long as, 50% more time to get jobs than younger workers. I think it's possible. I think it's possible by changing up the way you go about doing it. Back to Bobby's point about networking and about meeting with people and not doing this with a direct gimme agenda, but always be giving. Really, you're going out on an informational basis to build as many people in your network with the same affinity that you have, and you're going to get the job through the network. You're not going to get the job by applying and sending out resumes.
Yeah, I think this is a really important point and both of you have touched on this, where the notion that you fill out a resume, you send it in, there's an ad that you're responding to. Most jobs don't get that way. And the academic research, scholarly research, is really convincing. More than 50% of all jobs come through, third degree of separation, colleagues,
And so I understand it's about 85%. That's the stat that I've read.
Bobby?
But you can create those networks very easily with technology these days. As I mentioned earlier, the Facebook groups in your industry can be very helpful.
LinkedIn can be very helpful.
And also,
really important,
especially for women who come back into the workforce having taken a break for children, there are many new resources. For example, I'm going to give you a name of a company that just emerged in the last year called Après Group. And what they do is they match companies that are looking for workers that have incredibly in-depth backgrounds, incredibly skilled backgrounds, I should say, but have not been in the workforce because they took a break just for having children. And they're recruiting them. So it's like a mini LinkedIn for women that are coming back into the workforce. So, and I'm sure there's many other sites like that. So that's Après Group. And you should check those out because those are great ways to find employers that are looking for employers that in almost every case are older.
And as you're networking, you shouldn't feel embarrassed getting back in touch with people that you haven't been in touch with for 10 years.
Of course not. Yeah, people understand. Yeah. Absolutely. Most people have families and have taken breaks or adjustments in some way. I worked part-time for a number of years here at Reuters, which was wonderful. I worked 4 days a week. So people understand that you need to ramp up and then slow down sometimes in career paths. It's not always exactly the same velocity throughout your whole life.
I think if there's anything that we're getting from the millennials, it is this much more open attitude about work and the importance of meaning in work. So whereas, boomer generation people were very kind of nose to the grindstone, focused 9 to 5, 24/7, millennials are saying, hey, back up a second. What are you doing? Why are you doing it? I mean, how does this relate to meaning and purpose? I've got a 24-year-old daughter, and I'm constantly kind of getting the sense of well, I don't want to just work to work. I don't want to be part of that grind. I want to have to feel that I'm doing something that matters. So I think we can pivot off of that in our own job search and understand that a lot of the people that we're going to be talking to and interviewing with who are younger than we are going to be more open to a more expansive philosophy of work.
We have another online comment.
Yeah, Dazed and Confused kind of has a question about the premise of our show. He or she says, my experience in looking for a job shows me that there are 50 to 150 applicants for every job out there, depending on the role. So maybe Dazed and Confused has run into everyone making this career shift at once and running into a lot of competition. And I think he's wondering how to make himself stand out in a pool with so many other applicants.
Okay, let's go. John, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, it's back to what we were just talking about don't rely on your resume to get that job. If you want to stand out, it's not about standing out against the 150 other people who are sending in resumes. The chances are poor that you're going to stand out. What you need to do is shift your focus to what we're talking about here in terms of building the network. You're going to stand out in the network because these are people that you have essentially handpicked and hand-developed who are feeling and acting and living the same way that you are. So when something comes up in their network, they're going to refer the network to you rather than you have to knock on this door with a blindfold on, trying to compete with people inside that room that you don't know who the heck they are.
So I would just add to that, whatever company that is that you are looking at that you want to work at, I would find out everything you can about that company and find some way, somehow, someone that knows someone that knows someone at that company. And you can do that these days between LinkedIn, Facebook, all your social networks, just asking around, find someone that works in that company and make the connection, and if you can, find a way to have them walk your resume or email your resume and get in front of the person that is the decision maker or the gatekeeper. You can always find a way in. We are all so connected these days. I think that's the best way to stand out and at least get yourself considered.
Okay, a lot more questions to ask, but let's just take a little break, and we're going to go to the news with Mike Mohan.
Good morning. 2 days after a Christmas storm blasted the northern Great Plains, authorities are still advising people not to travel across parts of North Dakota. Interstate 94 has reopened, but the National Weather Service says some roads are still blocked by drifting snow. Minot International Airport reopened overnight, but flights aren't expected to resume until late morning. Thousands of homes and businesses are still without power in the Dakotas and in Michigan. A flight recorder from a Russian military plane that crashed Sunday has been taken to a lab outside Moscow for an initial examination. Investigators are hoping that the black box will help determine why the plane crashed 2 minutes after it left the Russian city of Sochi with 92 people on board. Rescue teams have recovered at least 12 bodies and numerous body fragments. The plane was headed for Syria. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is in Hawaii for a visit to the USS Arizona Memorial at Pearl Harbor, which honors U.S. service members killed in the 1941 attack. He'll be joined today by President Obama. And U.S. home prices have risen again, driven up by buyers bidding for scarce properties. The Standard & Poor's Case-Shiller 20-City Home Price Index rose more than 5% in October from a year earlier. But prices for 20 cities are still 7% below their July 2006 peak. In the Twin Cities right now, we have 19 degrees. More news ahead on Minnesota Public Radio News. It's 9:34.
Programming is supported by Plains Art Museum's Indian Country, The Art of David Bradley. 3 decades of work exploring identity and self-determination from an Indian point of view. January 25th through May 6th, 2017. More information at plainsart.org.
We're back. I'm Chris Farrell, substituting for the vacationing Carrie Miller, and we have two guests on the line. John Tarnoff, he's a veteran of the entertainment industry, and Bobby Rebel, she's a Reuters business video journalist. Both are authors, and we're talking about what comes next if you want to be making a career change. And we got another question online.
So yeah, if you want to join in on the conversation, you can do so online at nprnews.org/live. You can also join us by calling in at 800-242-2828. Or if you're local, it's 651-227-6000. And earlier this morning, we had Josie in St. Paul call in, and who asked, what does networking really mean? And do those networking events really yield anything?
That's a good question. We'll go to you, Bobby, first. But I like that question.
I like it, too. I think networking means just talking to people throughout your entire day. And that could mean if you take yoga classes, talk to the person next to you. Learn about them. Just be friendly. Smile. Say hello. Introduce yourself. it doesn't necessarily mean the stereotypical going to a, quote, networking event. I think networking events, if they work for you, that's great. But the danger in them is that very often everyone at a networking event is looking to get something. Yep. So they're basically looking at your name tag and figuring out, what can that person do for me? And that can sometimes not be the most effective. So I think it's just living your life. Smile at people. Say hello in your daily life and talk to people. Find out what they do and increase your network. Increase your friendships.
So are these networking events really worth it? I mean, I seem to get an email every other day about a networking event that's happening and why don't you come? And you kind of look at them and go, well, I mean, really? What do you are they worth going to?
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you asking me or John?
Yeah. I think they're worth going to. I think Bobby's got a good point there about taking the networking idea into every facet of your life. But I think what you need to do if you're going to jump into this is you have to have an elevator pitch. You have to have a 30-second, 45-second spiel about who you are, where you're at, what you're looking to do, what your process is. And it's not about asking anybody for anything. It's really about a statement of who you are and where you're going. And it's something that is really hard for people to do, and it's really, really important for them to figure it out. So I would write it down. I'd start rehearsing it with your family and your friends. I'd start kind of trying it on like a new pair of jeans and really wearing them in so that you get really, really comfortable with this idea of explaining who you are and what you're trying to do at any point.
Because this is really part of that entrepreneurial mindset. I mean, entrepreneurs, by definition, are always selling themselves. And I remember I did a book event, and it was a meeting of entrepreneurs, and I had the books out in the car, and I walked in initially, and they looked at me and they said, "No, go get your books. You got to sell books. That's what we're here for." But right. And I was like being a little diffident, and I wanted to make sure that it was going to be okay. And they're like looking at me like, "Dude, this is what you do."
You have to be your own advocate. Absolutely.
People are really hung up about this idea of selling themselves. And I get this a lot. It's like, oh, I can't sell myself. I'm not good at that. And, oh, I feel so uncomfortable. And my reframe on this is, don't think of it as selling yourself. Think of it as being of service. What you have to offer is going to help someone out, whether it's a business owner or whether it's, back to your idea, Bobby, about being in the yoga class. If you can help someone get into a pose in a yoga class, you're not selling yourself. You're being of service. And I think to have this idea of being of service for what you do and what you want to do and how you're looking to be useful in your work, what's wrong with that?
Exactly. I agree. And I just want to add to that, to the issue of selling yourself. And this is something that I think older workers are not as comfortable with, and I'm being stereotypical here, versus young people that have grown up in this selfie world where it's so much self-promotion on social media. One thing I talk about in How to Be a Financial Grown-Up is the importance of your image everywhere. So if you are an older worker, you really should get on all the social media channels and be up with things and maybe try to become a voice in your industry and tweet in articles that are interesting that say a point of view and that show that you are in the know and try to get followers and create a network that way. Your image is everywhere. It means getting a great picture on LinkedIn and not being embarrassed about that. I recently scolded a friend of mine that is out of work right now. Her company was bought, and her picture is a picture of herself as kind of a mom, which is great, but that's not the right picture for LinkedIn. The right picture for LinkedIn is a beautiful headshot that shows you on your best day ever, where you just look flawless, and it's okay to Photoshop it a little and make you look your very best, because that's the image that you want to put out for your future employer and for your clients as well. It's important.
Absolutely.
So let's go to the phone lines and Michael from, and this is when it comes in that I did not grow up in Minnesota. Minnetrista? Is it Minnetrista? Michael.
That's right.
So what's your comment?
I'd just like to, I was laid off about 6 months ago, and it was the first time I was laid off in my career, and really embarrassed, and it was kind of a humiliating experience, and just, what I did is I just basically went out. I let people know that I had been laid off, and and I was looking for something to do. And you'd be surprised at how many people, you know, friends and you know, neighbors, people in your community want to, you know, help you find a new job. And that's it. I think there's a lot of people that are embarrassed to share that with.
You know,
go ahead,
Chris, can I just jump in here? I think one of the great things that you point out through that comment is that getting fired does not have to be a shameful experience. And this is something which has kind of persisted in our business culture for a long time. But I think you got to look at the economy overall and realize that in an economy that's moving so fast, fit is going to be very fluid, and someone's appropriateness for a particular job may be short-lived. And this is just the way it's going. And Bobby, I think you were talking about how millennials understand that there are, you know, 4, 5, 6 jobs for them at least over the course of the first maybe 20 years of their career. So the idea that you got to move on is no longer a shameful experience. And I think, you know, the caller's experience of reaching out, being forthright about it, getting the support from the community is a great lesson for everyone who is really concerned about this issue.
And I agree. I think the stigma of losing a job is really gone, because people lose jobs for so many reasons. Sometimes a business is just refocusing and they're not going to be expanding or growing the area that you're in. In How to Be a Financial Grown-Up, one of my favorite role model stories comes from Sally Krawcheck, and she talks candidly all the time and frankly jokes about it that she was famously fired from her job on Wall Street, and that's kind of in a way what she's become most notorious for. It happens to the best of them, and often it can have nothing to do with you. It's just the job market is changing, your company is changing, the focus is changing. But I think, as you said, letting people know that people want to help, people want to say yes, they want to do something good, and that's the way to make it happen.
And we have another online.
Yeah. So you can join the conversation again at 800-242-2828. Or online at nprnews.org/live. And Tom from Minnetonka called in to offer this bit of advice. He said there are jobs all over the country in HVAC, welding, etc. He said, we just can't find enough welders in Minnesota. And many of these jobs and industries offer training on the job, and they're interested in hiring older workers as well. We also had Max in Eden Prairie call in to ask this question. He said, what about asking for a raise in 2017? His company gave him added responsibility this last year, but never gave him a corresponding pay upgrade. When and how do you ask the tricky question of getting a raise?
Okay, I want to break this up into two. And first, I wanted to address, because I think this is an important issue about, you know, skilled labor, electricians, welding. You know, a lot of times this conversation about second careers, third careers is about white collar work. And yet skilled labor, there's an enormous demand for skilled labor. There are opportunities. And I was reading a recent story on the border, Wisconsin, Minnesota border, where more and more women are having second careers in medical manufacturing, because manufacturing has really changed. It's not Stanley Kowalski with the ripped T-shirt, you know, on the assembly line, trying to, you know, just brute force. It's actually, a lot of it is using your brain and using computers. So, John, you know, this notion that, you know, we should expand our horizons outside of the white collar world when we're thinking about reinventing ourselves.
Absolutely. I mean, I think everything's on the table. And, you know, we were talking about this earlier in the conversation about going back to old ideas about what you'd like to do. And, you know, Bob was talking about, you know, the side hustle. And I would encourage anyone, regardless of what your background is, to open up to getting more training in an area which you think you might like. And it might just very well be in a manufacturing, manual labor, artisanal kind of enterprise. And what I've read actually is interesting, that in the manufacturing sector, there is an increasing interest in older workers, because older workers tend to be more settled, more stable. They really appreciate the job. They have better attendance records. Their productivity is more consistent. So I think it's a great time to be thinking about this this question in the sector.
And Bobby, I was thinking with, you know, a lot of younger people with this sort of side hustle, you know, it tends to be, maybe I'm doing a little stereotyping here, but it seems that a lot of it is sort of in the artisan craft economy where ranging from, you know, being a DJ to an artisan bread maker on the side. But there's something going on in the sort of craft artisan side of the of building a career with younger people.
Well, I think that's part of the entrepreneurial spirit that young people have. And I don't know that is that different in terms of the 20-somethings, let's say, versus previous generations. I think people are always trying different things, and it's just manifesting itself in different ways now. But I do think that there's also going to be a new appreciation as people continue with these side hustles that are multiple jobs and they're juggling. I do think that we will start to see an appreciation for the full-time job where you have corporate benefits as well. And that's something I talk about in the book as being underappreciated sometimes, all the value add. For example, when you're talking about the manufacturing jobs that John was just talking about, is it, quote, blue-collar jobs, a lot of them have wonderful benefits, medical benefits, not to be discounted. We don't know what's going on with Obamacare. Those have value, too. So I think it's going to be evolving how that is. But I do think that young people want to get that sense of fulfillment, so they've got to get the financial backing of their main job because they have, in many cases, so much student debt to pay off. And then when it comes to the side hustles, they're looking for something a little different, maybe using a different part of their brain. And that's where you get into the artisan stuff.
And I know we got to get to the question about the raise, but I first want to go to Tom from the Iron Range.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. What has been your experience?
I went from labor and trade, self-employed, to looking for a job to where I could be employed by a city, such as like a firefighter or fire department. And that's a very competitive, difficult job. The only way I found that it was possible for me after 4 years of applying at 13 different departments throughout the whole state was to continue to personally improve while at home. What is it that other people don't have that I can do personally to add to my resume and then get to know that community, the people who are involved in public service, and let them know that the goal is to be of value toward the community, toward the city, toward wherever you're going to be, and then be rooted and established there so that when the opportunity presents itself, you're not just one of the other 150 applicants, you're the applicant because you've put yourself in that position by not just sitting there saying, why can't I get a job? Why can't I get hired? But taking all of the no's and using it as a fire to improve your ability and grow.
And so it sounds like you in making this move, it wasn't just a job, it was more a job as a calling. And is that right? I mean, has that been your experience?
Yeah, partially. I know that I like people and I like to be able to help out. So what is it that people are getting hired have? And then I had to go back to college and go to school for a few years to attain a paramedic and different, whatever it takes, whatever a department is looking for, a niche that you can have to fit into, to add toward, because it's a team approach toward service. You don't just go out as one person, how do I fit in as a team and as not the 21-year-old applicant, but a 35-year-old applicant who's coming in with some life experience, and how is that going to add flavor instead of maybe the extra 15 years of longevity that a younger applicant's going to have?
And did you work on your, John had mentioned the elevator pitch. I mean, did you work on your elevator pitch?
Absolutely, because everyone says, why do you want to do this? And they say, well, I've wanted to be a firefighter since I was five. Well, everybody says that. How do you find a way to make it that, wow, there's some solidity in this? And then I went on to different forums online and found people who put up actual 300-page documents of what is it that they're looking for, what kind of a mindset, what kind of a personality, so that when you're communicating with them, you're not trying to find the right answer, but you are the right answer. So when they ask you these questions, it's not what do I say, but this is who I am, this is who I've become, and then it's a much more natural fit. So when you communicate, it's not you're looking up and to the left trying to figure out what to say, but it's who you've trained and molded yourself to become.
Well, I love this because you knew what you wanted to do. You realized you had to get some additional training and education to do it, and then you networked in order to make this happen, and you're willing to be patient. So, John, I mean, that's my reaction. How about John and Bobby? John, what's yours?
Well, I think this is a great story, and I think, you know, to the question of the previous caller about how do you stand above the noise and how do you get noticed,
this was clearly a long-term commitment that you were willing to make. And I think, you know, this is something that I learned really early on in my business, which is when you get fired or kind of knocked down, it's not that people don't want you in the business. They want to see if you're going to get back up. So it's all about giving people the opportunity to observe your commitment and to really understand the value that you're going to contribute to the field. Because again, it's about fit. They want to know that you're one of them. So if you, as the caller just beautifully expresses, if you really want to be part of an industry, then you have to know why. You have to get the training you need. You have to reach out to the people, get to know them, and have them get to know you. And the more that happens, if it's aligned and if it's right, then you're going to be successful.
And let's go to Rebecca from Aiken. Rebecca?
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi. I'm well, thank you.
So, what's your question?
My question is, I've been teaching for about a decade now, and I'm looking to leave the profession. I have multiple degrees, and I'm looking to use them in a different way. But I keep running into the issue of people truly thinking that those who can't do teach that.
That's
because
terrible.
Because I'm just a teacher, I must not be skilled in the areas that they would need.
Don't these prejudices just drive you crazy? I mean, it's like, where does this come from? It's like when someone has a baby and they take 3 years off, it's like, well, you went brain dead over the past 3 years, so you have no skill. These things I think they're terrible. But Bobby, what is your reaction?
Depending on what industry you want to be in, I would go do a side hustle in that industry, and you don't even need to talk to them about the fact that you are a teacher full time. You could just do what you want to be doing, even if you start out doing it in a volunteer capacity, just to get in and do that on the side, and hopefully you enjoy it, and then pivot.
John?
Is that an option? I don't know.
The only other thing I would suggest, Rebecca, is that you consider blogging. You consider establishing thought leadership in the areas that you're interested in so that there is some reference. I mean, Bobby was talking before about how visible we all are and in terms of the profile picture, but I think this really extends to all of our value as thought leaders and as people who are valuable in the areas that we want to go into. So how do you do that? Well, you start to study and do research and then start to have opinions, and you're starting to comment on other people's posts and creating posts of your own so that if someone wants to look you up, they're going to know that you're more than what their prejudice might want to tell them you are, right? If people are saying, well, you know, all you are is a teacher, well, clearly not. You have a lot more on the ball than that.
And Rebecca, one of the things I found that has worked for a number of people, I don't know if it worked in your circumstances, is to, you know, have coffee, have lunch, informational interviews where you're not looking for a job. What you're doing is you're sort of saying, you know, I'm interested in doing what you're doing. And how did you get to where you're going? And then you always end the conversation with, who else should I talk to? And then it becomes part of your gathering of information, gathering of knowledge, and people get to know who you are as opposed to this prejudice of, well, you're a teacher, so obviously that's all you can do. I mean, what do you think?
I think it's worth giving a try. I do some side work already.
What's the side work in?
I've done so. I write copy.
Okay.
I write on the side.
Great.
And so I've done some marketing. I was able to get an internship at one point, but I find that I'm still stuck in the same scenario. But I keep looking for new avenues. I've looked at going back to school, but that would be my third degree, and so whether or not I want to put myself in that much debt,
right,
is a whole new adventure. But I'm still trying to navigate a way to try a different career.
Okay. Well, good luck on this.
If you've got 2 degrees, I think I would pivot to the people and to developing a better network.
And the social media presence that John talked about is really crucial.
Now, let's get to the question that it was, if you could
go back to it. And it's a question about getting a raise. What was that now?
Yeah. So it was Max in Eden Prairie.
That's it.
And he said that his company last year gave him added responsibility and didn't bump his pay accordingly. And so he's wondering, now that he's done this new thing for a couple of months, how should he ask for the raise?
So I think this is a question that's going to be going on a lot, because the mantra among management has been, you know, do more with less. That's what they've been asking their employees. And going through a period where employees have had jobs, I think there's going to be a shift. So it's very easy to say, well, ask for a raise. But how do you go about doing that? Bobby?
I think this is tough. I think, first of all, you have to decide, do you want a raise? And if that, do you want to stay at the company? Do you need to stay at the company? Because one way to get a raise is, of course, to leave. And that is something that, especially with young people, they do consider. Often millennials leave jobs in less than 2 years. If you do want to stay, I think it's important to do your homework before you go in, know what your peers in your industry make, and be ready to make the case. It's also very important to have a path to yes, because whomever you're asking for a raise probably has to then justify it higher up, and they don't want to give you a raise because that's not good for business. It's always best to pay your employees the smallest amount you can to retain them and have them be as productive as possible. So you need to create a path to yes. Make your case, do your research on peer earnings at rivals, and also have a backup plan. If they say no, can you ask for something different? Can you ask for a better title? Can you ask for more vacation? Can you ask for some other benefit that's going to be valuable to you?
John, I imagine you've had a lot of experience with this.
Well, the one thing I would suggest here for Max is, I don't know how his HR is structured at his company, but I would actually ask for a review. And perhaps by getting into their face and kind of saying, look, I want to know what you think of me, and I want to get a sense of what the benchmarks are and the goal setting is here. Perhaps by getting into a more formal process there, he can raise both their awareness of what his value is and what it could be, and he can get a better sense of really how they see him and whether this is something that is possible, as Bobby was saying, for the long term, or whether he needs to think about getting another job.
Right, and that's probably the other thing I would emphasize, and Bobby mentioned it, you mentioned it, which is, what's your exit strategy? Because if they come back and the answer is no, and that you can live with that, and that's fine, okay, but do you want to really press hard? And if you do want to press hard, what's your exit strategy? Because you may be facing that situation. And again, I think this is a good year for people to be taking that kind of a risk, gathering that kind of information. Are they satisfied with their situation and moving on? So go ahead, John.
One more thing on this question is, one of the ways of perhaps framing the question is to ask them, what would it take for me to get a raise, to get more income? You know, what would you be looking for me to do? Is there something that I could be doing that I'm not already doing that would – that would bring along additional compensation.
Okay,
and
well,
get a sense of how they see the value of what you do and how the company works.
Well, thank you very much.
But
yep. So we need to. We're out of time, and I have a lot more to ask you guys. But thank you very much. Bobby Rebell is Reuters business video journalist, and John Tarnoff is a career coach. Thank you very much.